We are rolling along with episode 2 of season 2 of Transformers Generation 1. So let's get after it. This is Energon Entries. Welcome back to Energon Entries, everybody. As always, this is your host, Matt Freights, and I want to thank you for taking out the time to listening to this podcast, and I hope that you are enjoying it. And before we get into episode 2 of season 2, I do want to reach out and say thank you to Jeff, who left a comment and a wonderful, wonderful review on Amazon Audible or Amazon Music, wherever it is that he is listening. And it was a wonderful review, and it makes me feel good because I don't believe it's anybody that I know. And so it's nice that what I'm doing is resonating with you and that you're enjoying it. So I hope that you keep enjoying it, and I hope that you spread the word with anybody else who is watching or is into Transformers. And with that, let's get into the episode recap. The episode opens with Wheeljack giving the Autobots a demonstration of his new invention, the Immobilizer, a weapon used to stop the Decepticons in their tracks. The Ark is damaged during the demonstration as Ironhide mistakes Hound's hologram of Laserbeak for the real enemy, and the Immobilizer is damaged. While at the arcade, Spike and Bumblebee also run into a female human named Carly, who confesses her fascination for Bumblebee and the Autobots. While Spike and Bumblebee are searching for materials, they are stopped by a police officer for speeding. There, Ravage attacks Bumblebee and during the skirmish plants a microbug on Bumblebee. After, another demonstration of the Immobilizer takes place at Autobot headquarters. During the demonstration, the microbug allows Megatron and the Decepticons to learn of the powers the Immobilizer possesses. After repairing his invention, Wheeljack ends up a victim of the Immobilizer as Spike messes with it and Wheeljack jumps in front to save Spike from its beam. Meanwhile, Ironhide finds Carly snooping on the Autobots and during this, hears a commotion near the Immobilizer. He returns to find the Autobots at gunpoint and blames himself for his lack of awareness. A battle ensues, and Megatron comes into control of the Immobilizer. After the battle, Ironhide steps down from active duty as he feels he is becoming too old for service. Carly, blaming herself for how Ironhide is feeling, steals a boat and attempts to scuba down to Decepticon headquarters to plant a grenade. She is captured by Soundwave and Laserbeak and is now Megatron's captive. The grenade Carly plants explodes, causing Decepticon headquarters to flood. The flooding is contained except for Carly's cell, and Megatron gleefully watches her impending death as the water rises. The Decepticons leave Carly to die, and that allows Ironhide to swim in and rescue her. The Decepticons return to the surface and freeze Ironhide just after rescuing Carly. A battle ensues, and during the battle, Carly devises a plan for Brawn to tunnel underground to get to the Immobilizer. Once there, Jazz distracts the Decepticons with a sound and light show, and Carly is able to reverse the effects of the Immobilizer's beam. As Rumble attempts to freeze more Autobots, the opposite happens, and the once frozen Autobots are now freed. Ironhide is able to obtain the Immobilizer from Laserbeak and destroy it, causing the Decepticons to retreat. The episode ends with Spike asking Carly on a date and the two riding off in the sunset. So this episode starts out with an interesting voice quirk. You don't see this too often with the Autobots, but I know that Cliffjumper was voiced by Casey Kasem, who is a famous or was a famous DJ back in the day. And so this voice that he has as they're starting this episode and he's talking to Optimus Prime is not a voice that I actually recognize. And I'm not sure which one they switched out, but this one was not recognizable. So we get to the demonstration. Now, Wheeljack is very excited about this invention that he has made, and he knows that it could turn the tide in the war against the Decepticons. Of course, in order to demonstrate it, Hound needs to demonstrate his power, which is to create holograms. And we've heard about holograms before. Now, Ironhide gets really jazzed up. He gets jazzed up because he thinks it's Laserbeak. The funny part about this is it's almost as if Ironhide knows, hey, whenever we do something in the base or we demonstrate something, we have a new robot, it needs to be destroyed. And I'm talking about the base. And so he goes all in, tries to blast Laserbeak, and in doing so, basically blasts the Ark. And I think that that's hilarious because it happens so often. And so this invention gets ruined, of course, because the base gets ruined. So we get some consequences here. And Wheeljack says, hey, Spike, Bumblebee, can you just run into town and get this part? This part, I'm assuming, is a Cybertronian part. Can they really just run into town to do this? There's a little bit of inconsistency there. And when, of course, they get there, they meet another human. Now, we know about Sparkplug. We've seen some other humans before. But in this case, we actually get a human that is interacting with the Autobots out in public. And that's Carly. Now, Carly is interested in Bumblebee, and it seems as if she is almost physically attracted to Bumblebee, which is a little bit weird. Also weird is that Spike gets jealous of this because maybe he wants to get a little bit of that action. But we're going to talk about this later about his age, but it's like, is there jealousy between Bumblebee and Spike? They never really revisit that. Of course, the officer stops them for speeding and he asks Spike a very important question. Are you even old enough to drive? And it's like, how old is he? Because they have talked about how he's not old enough to drive in the previous season. So that would put him under 16, theoretically. If you're thinking about the 80s, the driving age most of the time was 16. And so he's got to be under the age of 16. Now, I think it's funny that the officer didn't know that Bumblebee was an Autobot because every Autobot has these giant Autobot symbols. And I think that the Autobots have been on Earth long enough that they'd be able to recognize it, but they don't actually recognize it here. And it's just part of the story. So the Decepticons planted this microbug during this battle. So Ravage obviously was looking for an Autobot somewhere because I don't think he was planning on meeting Bumblebee per se. And they're planting this bug not knowing what they're actually looking for. To me, this is very smart because they're looking ahead. They obviously want to find out what the Autobots are talking about. So it doesn't have to be because they want to find something specific. They just want to know what the Autobots are up to. So I think that's interesting. Now, when they get back to base, of course, there's going to be another test of the immobilizer. And Optimus Prime says something that is amazing. He says, let's test it under safety conditions. And that's hilarious because I just mentioned how Ironhide ruined the arc and how often this happens. And it took a full season and a couple of episodes for Optimus Prime to say, you know, maybe we shouldn't do all this testing here at headquarters. Let's do it somewhere else. And this is Prime obviously now knowing that he needs to be forward thinking. And it doesn't happen very often. So, of course, during this demonstration, Spike does what Spike does. And he gets in trouble and he ruins things. And this is a theme with Spike a lot of times. It seems like he doesn't think, he always needs to be rescued. And so he does that by not paying attention, stepping on the remote, and he immobilizes Wheeljack. And it's like, why do they keep having these humans around if they constantly are giving them fits? And to be fair to Ironhide here, he was on the lookout and he was looking in one direction. He obviously sees Carly, he becomes distracted. But the Decepticons, I think, could have come from anywhere, and so it's not a guarantee that he would have seen it. It just fits into the storyline. Now, of course, during this little skirmish, there's a back and forth, and Trailbreaker uses his force field. I have to say, I think Trailbreaker's force field might be the most overpowered thing in the entire series because it always works. And yes, it only works in one direction, but it always seems to work. They never seem to have a problem with it. Of course, Starscream tries to get around this, and I feel like Starscream is slowly becoming the Spike of the Decepticons. It seems like everything that he does doesn't work out and puts the Decepticons at a disadvantage, and he always seems to get them in trouble. Now, during this battle, Megatron turns into gun mode. We've talked about this before, and Ironhide is hit what looks like in the shoulder, maybe even in the chest region, and he goes down pretty hard, and he's almost incapacitated. So in previous episodes, other Autobots have been hit and seem to be okay. Optimus Prime got hit point blank in the season finale of season one, and he was just fine. And so there's an inconsistency about whether Megatron is superpowered as a gun or not. Now, Ironhide, we find out, can also shoot out the sticky red goo from his arms. And we've seen this power before because he put out a fire using fire retardant chemicals out of those same arms. So he seems to have the ability to sort of create whatever goo or whatever material is necessary in order to do whatever is needed to be done. Just something to think about. So obviously when they get back, Ironhide needs to be repaired, and Ratchet and Ironhide are, I feel like they're like brothers, because if you have a brother out there, or even if you have a brother or a sister, you know the bickering that goes on with siblings, and I feel like Ratchet and Ironhide are always bickering with each other. Now, Ratchet has really terrible bedside manner. He's always telling the Autobots to be quiet or sit down or whatever, and so I think that that's a fun little interaction. They are the same kind of van, so it would make sense that maybe they were made at the same time. Ironhide is giving Carly a tour of the Ark. And he goes back into this place that we've never seen before. So we get a little bit of a glimpse of the depth of the Ark. And he goes into this one room and there are human weapons there. Human grenades, human missiles. And why do they have those? Are they taking them away because they're trying to save humans from themselves? And they said, hopefully we don't have to use these. Well, Why are they using human weapons to begin with? They are advanced robots from another planet. They should be using their own technology. And Carly steals a grenade, and her big plan is to go scuba diving. Where did she get this boat? Where did she get the scuba gear? Is this hers? Do her parents own this? Did she rent it? It's just kind of strange that all of a sudden she goes from the Ark, steals a grenade, and has a boat and scuba gear and knows how to scuba dive. How old is Carly? Carly seems to come from money, in my opinion. And of course, when they realize that Carly has been captured, Sparkplug says, well, Spike can't go get her on her own. Well, why did they let Spike go by himself? Spike never does anything right, so why would they let him go by himself? Seems like it's not really a great plan, in my opinion. And I will say this, one thing that you can say about Megatron is that he is evil and he thinks ahead. However, Megatron always uses the humans against the Autobots, and I think that that's always very, very smart. However, in the scene where Carly is appeared to be drowning, or at least her room is filling with water, Megatron watches her with a glee that we've never seen before. And this is kind of taking his evil to a new level. I mean, there are different levels of evil, in my opinion. And him watching it almost happy is maniacal. It's almost diabolical. And I think we've never seen this kind of evil from Megatron before. It was a little unsettling. And one thing that you can say about Wheeljack as well is that he made something that works here, and the immobilizer worked really, really well. When they got back to shore, Rumble is using it, and I know that Megatron said that they perfected it, but this was Wheeljack's invention, and it immobilized every single Autobot without a hiccup. And I think that Wheeljack is very smart and made something that actually worked, whereas with the Dinobots and everything, there always seemed to be something wrong with his inventions. And so I think he has something to be proud of here, if I'm being honest. Now, Jazz obviously has the distraction, and he always plays the same song. And I've noticed that they play this whenever there's music played, whenever Jazz is playing something, and I feel like this is the go-to song. It's like, hey, let's figure out a song that's hip in the 80s, and that seems to be the song, and they play it over and over and over again. It's probably an original song. They probably didn't have rights to any other songs, if that was even a thing back then, and so just an observation that I made there. And Carly sure reversed that immobilizer very, very quickly. Now, they had this plan where they're going to dig underground. They're going to get to it. That's all fine. Braun has obviously done that before. And now Carly gets there and immediately, within seconds, flips the switch or flips something. And now the immobilizer's ray is reversed. And she saves the day and the Autobots get saved. And it's like, wow, that happened quickly. But then in the next scene, as they're closing out the episode, you find out that Carly, or she casually mentions about going to MIT, which makes her at least 3 or 4 years older than Spike. You kind of wonder, like, how old could she be? Because I said, if Spike is less than 16 years old, and let's say she's a freshman, that makes her 18. That's a little bit strange. Like, that kind of borderlines on statutory stuff. And I know we're not getting into law here, and we're not getting into realism. This is a show, but just something to think about. And as a 41-year-old, it's like, wow, the age disparity they don't really talk about. But it makes sense as to, number one, why she was able to get a boat, because MIT is very expensive. So even if she did get a scholarship, it's still very expensive. And of course, the fact that she's very, very smart. So that sort of explains why she has the ability to change the immobilizer very quickly. But this brings up a geographic inconsistency. And I've mentioned this in season one about how the Autobots always need to drive somewhere. The Decepticons can fly. And it seems like no matter where they go, whether it's Peru or the United States or wherever, the Autobots have to drive to get there. And that seems very inconsistent. So for Carly to talk about going to MIT, we don't really know where the Ark is. And they sort of make reference to the fact that it's in like Tennessee or somewhere in the South or even in the desert. They've talked about that before. And so it seems like, well, where are they? Like, how did Carly get there? Does she live there? Was she on summer break? A lot of questions that I have. Overall, this episode, I thought it was fine. It was another standard fare. But it did bring up something as I'm watching it. I'm thinking, the humans may be more trouble than they're worth to the Autobots at times. And I know that that's kind of the crux of the Autobots' problem, is they always are saving the humans, and Optimus Prime will always go out of his way, even to the detriment of the Autobots, to save the humans. And that's just who Optimus Prime is. So I enjoyed it. It's the second episode. There are a lot of episodes in season two. I kind of peeked ahead a little bit, and we have a lot to get into. I hope that you've enjoyed this. I once again want to give a shout out to reviewer Jeff for reviewing the show. It means a lot to me, and I hope that you are sharing the show, whoever you are, and I hope that you are enjoying it. If you want to get in touch with me, MattyIceMedia@gmail.com is the email address. If you want to say hi, you want to ask questions or give me suggestions on things you want me to talk about, please support the Matty Ice Media Network, MattyIceMedia.com, where we have other podcasts like Fire, Footwear, Iceman and Coach, and some others, and we're looking to bring on some more. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Matty Ice Freights is the handle. I always love to hear from people out there. So get in touch with me. Let me know what you think of the show. And I love hearing from just about everybody. I hope this finds everybody well. I hope this finds everybody safe. And I'll talk to you next time. This is Energon Entries. On Energon Entries are those of Matt Freights and his guests, and not necessarily those of the Matty Ice Media Network. Energon Entries is exclusively owned by Matt Freights and is brought to you by the Matty Ice Media Network.